Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, I wanted to talk about kind of following on from last week's episode where I talked about why sleep becomes so different and impacted and affected as we start to move through perimenopause for many women. And so following on from that, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the circadian rhythm, the cortisol awakening response, little things that I've touched on in the previous episode and episodes before that, and just sort of really go into why this is so important and how you can really start to work on regulating yours so that you can start to feel better, sleep better, have more energy, balance your mood, and just to really help you see the link between our what's known as cortisol awakening response, so how much cortisol we produce in the morning, and the balance of cortisol for the rest of the day, just to see the impact of that, to understand that link between just general health and sort of symptoms and experiences that are really common as we move through perimenopause. Because if we can manage a sort of balance and support our circadian rhythm, our cortisol output across the day, it can have the biggest knock-on impact to so many different symptoms that we might be struggling with. So that's what we're going to go into today. Before I get into that, I just want to remind you that I have a couple of free resources that you can get from my website right now, as also in the show notes, links to both of them. One of them is my free 4-step perimenopause blueprint guide. So you can just grab that and you'll get a PDF copy sent to your email. And the other one is the recording of my Thrive Through Perimenopause masterclass, which you can also just grab from my website, or the link will also be in the show notes. Okay, so let's get into our body's internal clock and why this is so important, why it has such a big impact on our symptoms and experiences as we move through perimenopause. Our circadian rhythm is our 24-hour internal cycle, our body clock, and it controls our sleep and wake timing. It controls how well we fall asleep, how quickly we can fall asleep, how restorative our sleep is, how we feel when we wake up in the morning, what time we wake up, hormone release. So, you know, cortisol, melatonin, for example, body temperature, digestion, energy levels, immunity. So it controls or impacts, it controls a lot of things and impacts a lot of things. So immunity being one of them. Weight being another, for example, things that's impacted by it. And the most well-known circadian rhythm is this sleep-wake cycle. So the sleep-wake cycle is basically made up of two key hormones that set the rhythm. So cortisol is our natural sort of energy and wakening hormone, and this should peak 30 to 60 minutes after waking in the morning. This is known as the cortisol awakening response, or the CAR. That's what we call it for short. And basically that CAR, that cortisol awakening response, so how much cortisol you produce within the 30 to 60 minutes of waking up, helps you feel alert and motivated in the morning, ready for your day ahead, hopefully also in a good mood and just ready for whatever it is you need to do. Then your cortisol levels should start to taper down gradually after that peak at the sort of 30 to 60 minute mark of waking up. Then those levels should start to taper down gradually across the day, becoming lowest at night. And in place of that, so this sort of seesaw effect, we then get the production of melatonin, which is our sleep hormone. So this starts rising at night when it starts to get dark. So essentially it's starting to rise, you know, from darkness, basically. That'll probably be much earlier in the winter months and a little bit later in the summer months. So now that here in the UK, we're going to get the clocks going back this weekend. Well, they will have gone back by the time this is put out there. They would have gone back a couple of days ago when this episode is released. And so melatonin for many of us will start to increase earlier in the evening. So it's in response to darkness, basically dim lighting and particularly darkness. So it would be highest just before, you know, we're sort of getting ready for bed. It prepares the brain and the body for sleep. And then it peaks overnight whilst we're asleep and facilitates that deep restorative sleep. We can't produce both of these hormones at the same time. So like I said, it's like a biological seesaw. So if we, just a little clue there is that if we do things in our evening that spike cortisol at a time in the day when cortisol should be, as I said, tapering down, it starts to taper down from lunchtime and it would be at its lowest in the evening and before bed. So if we're doing things in the evening around that time when it should be tapering down and getting to its lowest that spike it, we're going to, number one, be increasing cortisol at a time when it shouldn't be increased, which is our energy awakening hormone. And we're also going to be sort of preventing or blunting the release of melatonin at a time when it should be, you know, being released. Now, if this is going to happen like every so often, for example, you know, every so often you might be out all, you know, all evening until late at night. Maybe you're out till 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, maybe you're even out till 3 a.m. Hopefully this is few and far between. These are the sorts of things that we could hormonally get away with in our 20s, in our 30s. But as we start going through our 40s and beyond, it just becomes something that we're not as resilient to. We can't quite re-regulate ourselves as easily if we're doing this all the time. If it's a one-off, you know, or just few and far between, a few handful of times throughout the year, it's very unlikely to be, you know, impacting us in any significant way. You know, it might just be that it will just be that on those particular nights, you're going to be spiking cortisol all evening. You're going to be out probably in bright lights, maybe loud music, dancing, having fun, enjoying yourself, maybe drinking alcohol. Hopefully not too much, but maybe you are. And then that, you know, is obviously going to put this whole thing, this biological seesaw off. So you won't be making melatonin at sort of midnight standing in a bar or dancing in a club. And then you might just find you feel a bit groggy for the next few days. You know, you might find it kind of takes ages to feel like you're back to normal again. You might sort of feel jet lag, that typical jet lag. And that's that sort of typical, you know, hangover feeling that we would even get it without alcohol. So for example, I don't even drink alcohol anymore, but I went out, my partner DJs every so often, he's a music producer, but he occasionally DJs, and I went with him a few weeks ago and we were in the club until about 2:30. By the time I came home, got ready for bed, you know, it's 3 o'clock. I felt awful. I felt hungover for days and days, had no alcohol whatsoever, drink lots of water. It was nothing to do with the alcohol. It's the sort of that typical hangover feeling of jet lag where I had basically, you know, created this situation of jet lag, basically putting these two hormones off. This seesaw was just completely off balance. So it took me a while to get over it, but I don't do that very often. I can't tell you the next time I'll do that. It would probably be another 6 months. So, you know, it's okay. I just got over it, did all the right things to help balance my hormones and my body. But yeah, I mean, if you were to add into the mix alcohol, then it would have just been a little bit worse. But anyway, kind of going off on a tangent there. So what we're really, the sort of main takeaway message here is that we can't make these two hormones at the same time. So forget, you know, being out and about. Let's just pretend we're, you know, we're just focusing on your normal evening, your normal day and your normal evening in normal life. So what we want to always remember is that of a normal evening, if we're doing things that spike cortisol, then we're probably going to impact, we are going to impact our ability to fall asleep and stay asleep and have a restorative sleep and wake up feeling refreshed. For example, if you're somebody who is doing your intense exercise in the evenings, or, you know, even sort of 5 o'clock in the day, it can be a little bit too late for the sensitive circadian rhythm that we tend to have more sensitive in 40s and beyond. Or if we are, you know, having really stressful conversations and discussions. I had a client once, I think I've told this story before, who just, you know, she just could not understand why she couldn't sleep well. She felt that she was doing all the right things. But when we really dug down, in our deeper dive consultation into what she actually does in the evening. She was saying, you know, I just sit and talk to my husband and we don't really watch much TV. We have dim lights. I said, well, what do you and your husband talk about specifically? Is it anything specific? She said, well, yeah, we actually have in the evenings, that's our time to discuss our finances because we don't get time to talk about it. They had three small children. So we discuss our finances and, you know, which aren't very good at the moment. So I said, are these conversations obviously quite stressful? She said, well, yeah, like sometimes I'm crying because it's like things just aren't really good at the moment. So obviously this was probably the thing that was spiking her cortisol and preventing her from having this deep sleep, because by the time she went to bed, although she felt absolutely exhausted, she was wired because of this stimulating, stressful, upsetting conversation that they were having. And she had all this cortisol and she wasn't making melatonin to help support a good night's sleep. So she eventually fell asleep because she was so physically and mentally tired, but she was just never waking up feeling refreshed. Now, when her and her husband decided to change the time that they would have these conversations, they started doing it in sort of earlier part of the day, the morning or parts of the weekend. It did make a big difference to how she slept at night. So just really thinking about all these different things that we might not even suspect could be having an impact on our ability to sleep well and make melatonin and, you know, put cortisol down at night. It's really important to sort of think, really reflect, what could I be doing or not doing that's impacting this without, you know, that doesn't seem obvious. Other things like just spending all of your evening replying to WhatsApps, being part of WhatsApp groups and having to respond to all these people. And, you know, maybe it's groups for the schools where your children are at or sporting groups or any other sort of groups that you might be in. And, you know, you're just sort of seeing that as a to-do, something that you have to do. So while you're sitting on the sofa at night, you'll write, okay, I'm going to get my WhatsApp out and clear all these unread messages or something like that. Maybe you're in groups that you're feeling you're annoyed by or triggered by, whatever it might be. Although these might seem like helpful times in the day to sit down and clear all these things, they are probably stressful. If they're not negatively stressful, maybe they are just, stimulating. Maybe it's a lot of not necessarily negative stress, but just a stimulatory stress that's keeping you alert and awake. And you're also looking at a blue light from your screen. And you could be doing this up, you know, some people say they're doing this up until 11, 12 at night. Maybe then once they finish with all the WhatsApp stuff, then they're going into Instagram and they're scrolling through and they think they're just looking for one thing, but then all these different reels pop up and, you know, an hour later, they're still there. Some of it could have been negative, triggering, horrible news, you know, all the state of the world today. Probably never been worse. Maybe it's funny stuff. Maybe it's comparison, whatever it might be. And then, you know, come 11, 12 o'clock and you think, oh gosh, I better go to bed. You put your phone down, go to bed, can't sleep. Or eventually when you do sleep, you can't stay asleep. You're waking up in the night multiple times and or you're just waking up feeling exhausted, thinking, what on earth just happened? I thought I was asleep, but now I've just woken up feeling groggy and unrefreshed. So these things, a lot of people just don't realize are having a really big impact. So moving on to other things that disrupt your circadian rhythm, even just any forms of stress, chronic stress, people who are just chronically stressed, and that really does apply to most of us, particularly in this modern day world. So I've just mentioned some just maybe stresses that we don't realize are stressors, you know, like the WhatsApps, scrolling through Instagram, all the different emotions that we might, that, you know, various posts and messages might trigger for us. But, and so those are just two quite big, significant things that keep us in the state of chronic stress. But what about all the other pressures that we have in our modern day world? You know, juggling so many different things. As women, we're potentially working in the home full time. You know, we're usually, even if we have very helpful partners, which I certainly do, we're still, you know, a lot of women, even, you know, let's say they don't have helpful partners or they live by themselves or they have, you know, three children and they're a single parent or whatever it might be. We're basically managing a home. We are the ones in charge of how things run in the home, keeping things in stock, you know, even just making sure you've got all the right foods in, the right cleaning products, all these different things that we need to keep going. I mean, I find that quite stressful. Sometimes I think I can't keep up with this. This is run out, that's run out. All of these things that we're basically trying to deal with on a daily basis. On top of that, you're working, you know, most of us working full time or building our own careers, having our own businesses. We're in our 40s and, you know, throughout that whole decade and beyond, we're usually at the peak of our careers or our working life. We may also have, like I said, children. These children could be different ages, small, teenagers, you know, going off to uni, whatever it might be, aging parents that are now maybe relying on us in a way that they just didn't before. We could rely on them and now the tables have turned. So there can be so much going on our plates, and not to mention dysfunctional relationships, unhappy relationships, you know, even whether that's at home, whether that's at work, whether it's with friends. So all of this is coming at us, and financial concerns, of course. That's probably one of the biggest sources of stress for so many of us is finances. And just how much is coming at us every day. You know, there's costs coming at us from all angles. I think it's just like, oh my God, I need to pay for that. Oh, now I need to pay for this. Oh, now this has come up, you know. And I don't have children, but I listen to, for example, my sister or clients who, or friends who have kids. And it's like, there's just one cost after another coming up in your face all the time. Or it could be medically related or whatever it might be. And so much, you know, so many of us just have little left over for ourselves or for us to just experience joy and fun. So all of that is going to be disrupting our circadian rhythm, because stress, however, whichever form it comes in, is triggering cortisol, is triggering adrenaline and then cortisol, which is there are stress hormones. And I've just shown you how cortisol is responsible for our circadian rhythm. We should make it in the morning as that cortisol awakening response, that healthy surge of cortisol 30 to 60 minutes after waking, then it tapers down. That's what we want cortisol to do. But if it's also a stress hormone and we're stressed, you know, we're chronically stressed, juggling lots of different things all the time, then we're also putting cortisol out of balance from that angle. And that will have a knock-on impact to its ability to produce, you know, healthy levels and keep the rhythm, keep to its natural rhythm as part of the circadian rhythm, the body clock. So you can sort of see how all of this just puts that, you know, ability to fall asleep, stay asleep, have a restorative sleep out of balance for so many of us. Some of the real, you know, kind of talked about the impact of stress, but the biggest drivers of us not being able to fall asleep at night, aside from stress, is having too little daylight exposure in the morning. So what we do in the morning has a huge impact on our ability to fall asleep and the quality of our sleep. So too little daylight in the morning, and then too much bright light, blue light, artificial light in the evening, coming from, you know, the lighting in our home, the overhead lightings, also screens, TV, for example. So those two things, lack of daylight, particularly in the morning, but also throughout the day, and then too much blue light exposure and screens in the evening. These are huge. So obviously we want to manage stress. Of course we do, because that's going to impact cortisol balance. But what we really, I would say the place to start is, what are you doing in the morning and what are you doing at night? And how can you maybe change those habits in favor of supporting cortisol being produced at the right time, coming down at the right time, and melatonin being produced at the right time? Other things that impact this circadian rhythm, cortisol and melatonin rhythm, is blood sugar dysregulation. So diets that are high in sugar, refined carbohydrates, low in protein, low in good fats, these are going to dysregulate your circadian rhythm, because again, cortisol is responsible, one of the hormones responsible in that kind of plays a big role in blood sugar regulation. So insulin is the key hormone that helps to balance our blood sugar levels and keep them within the healthy range. When we have blood sugar drops, so sharp drops, when blood sugar levels go below the ideal range, the stress hormone kicks in. So cortisol is released, because the brain perceives blood sugar dysregulation, blood sugar lows, as a stressor, because it is, it's dangerous. So that's another thing that's going to be putting cortisol out of whack. Any kind of sort of inflammation, chronic inflammation that might be going on in the body, which could be coming from high sugar, high refined carbs. It could be coming from gut infections that we don't know about. So if you have these chronic sort of low-grade infections with various unfriendly bacteria or parasites that we just may not know about. So that can be increasing inflammation in the body. If you have autoimmune disease, high alcohol intake, lots of different things can increase chronic inflammation in the body, and that's going to impact the stress response as well, because again, the brain is picking up on all of this as stress. Other things that can affect it are having caffeine too late in the day, having too much caffeine, particularly having caffeine in the morning on an empty stomach, like coffee. Ideally, we should wait until we've had a protein-rich breakfast before we have our first cup of coffee of the day. Research shows that delaying caffeine, so intake in the morning by about an hour or two, if possible, after waking, has been shown to support the circadian rhythm. Having caffeine too late in the day, so if you're having it like, you know, if you're still having caffeine at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or even earlier than that, even sort of 1 or 2 o'clock, caffeine has a half-life, which means it stays in the system for up to half of it will stay in the system for about 24 hours. So, you know, imagine you're still having coffee at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to get you going, to keep you going. You're going to be lying awake at night, potentially trying to fall asleep. What's wrong? Why can't I sleep? Potentially that caffeine is still in your system. Alcohol, having alcohol later in the day, you know, in the evening. I mean, really and truly, the best time to have alcohol is actually sort of earlier in the day, you know, around lunchtime, mid-afternoon, if at all, because in the evening, it would just have so much of an impact on blood sugar regulation throughout the night, and it can cause blood sugar dips that then wake you up. And also the liver is doing a lot of its work overnight. So if there's alcohol in the system when you then go to bed, the liver's just going to be, you know, working in the background to clear, to detoxify that alcohol. And that will prevent you from getting into the real deep restorative sleep states in the night. So, you know, high intensity exercise at night, which I've already sort of mentioned that, but just to reiterate, you know, a lot of clients, for example, or people I speak to will say the only time in the day that I have to actually do any exercise is at night. So, you know, some of these people are doing spin classes at night, or they're going for runs. And that's just the wrong time of day to be doing those kind of exercises, because they spike cortisol, basically. So that's not the time of day that you'd want to be doing those sorts of exercises. So we work together to see when they can switch that around. Can they do it in the morning? Can they do it in the earlier part of the day, or sort of lunchtime maximum? And when they do that, they do find that they start to notice that they're sleeping better. Even better is that they switch that type of training out completely for lifting weights, walking, yoga or Pilates. And even then, just that switch out, they find that they start to sleep better and feel better. So the reason this matters so much more in perimenopause is that the hormonal changes of perimenopause, you know, the erratic nature of estrogen and then its subsequent decline later in perimenopause, and that decline in progesterone, which is already starting from late 30s, early 40s, can make sleep just more fragile. So it makes our stress system more fragile as well. So basically our output of cortisol, our regulation of cortisol throughout the day, our cortisol awakening response, it just impacts that so much more. Whereas, like I said, in our 20s and our 30s, we're hormonally much more resilient to the things that I've just explained that can knock our circadian rhythm off balance. I mean, that's the case at any age, but we're far more resilient to those sorts of things in our 20s and 30s than we are once we get to our 40s and beyond. So what that'll do is elevate cortisol at night, making us feel wired but exhausted. And this applies even if somebody knows through testing, saliva testing, for example, that they have low cortisol, that they're not making much cortisol. It doesn't, just because we have low levels of cortisol doesn't mean that we can't have elevations in cortisol at night when it should be low, and vice versa. Whatever your sort of overall cortisol level is, it's all about the actual pattern of it as well. So a lot of us can feel wired but tired at night. You know, we really want to sleep. We're absolutely exhausted, but we're just lying there like wide awake, thinking all the things and just unable to fall asleep. We eventually do fall asleep, inevitably, because we're so exhausted, but we can just spring awake in the night with, again, all these sort of stressful thoughts racing around in our mind. Also, melatonin production naturally declines with age anyway. That applies to men as well. And so, you know, as we age, we want to be doing more to support melatonin production at the right times than we may have had to before. So it's just really important, if we want to support our sleep, our energy, our hormones in general, symptoms like brain fog, hot flushes, night sweats, we really want to be supporting our circadian rhythm. as much as we possibly can. So, yeah, I mean, what we're essentially looking for is this spike, this sort of peak of cortisol, 30 to 60 minutes of waking in the morning, and things that really help to support that, to make that happen, are waking up and stepping outside within 30 minutes of waking into natural daylight. So if you can step out into your garden, balcony, terrace, whatever it might be, or even better, throw on some clothes and go for a walk at that point. Let's say you work from home and you have the ability to just, you know, get out and then come back to start your work day. If you are not going to do that, if you're going to be getting ready and eventually leaving the house to actually go to work, then can you just step outside in some way? Any way that we can get ourselves into some natural daylight, even if it's just for 5 minutes. Now, we would need to spend a bit longer outside if, for example, it's really covered in cloud. If it's really cloudy, we'd want to spend about 10 minutes outside. If it's really dense clouds, 20 to 30 minutes if possible. So that would be like maybe going out for a walk. If it's really sunny, you just need 5 minutes. Now, at the time of recording, the clocks have just gone back. So it's going to be much, we're going to have a bit lighter mornings actually for a few weeks before it starts to get darker and darker in the morning. But we're going into winter basically. So most of us are going to be awake, you know, way before sunlight comes up, which could be sort of 8 o'clock at some points. So what we can do in that case is wake up in the morning and switch on a 10,000 lux light box. So these can be picked up from Amazon for about £20-30. And they mimic natural daylight. So the 10,000 lux that's being emitted from this little lamp really doesn't kind of mimic that early morning sunlight. So it's really helpful to have these scattered around the house, wherever you might be in the morning. I have one by my bed. So when I wake up, I switch it on, and then that, you know, lights up the room. Research shows just being in and around that 10,000 lux light for sort of 30 minutes in the morning is shown to be really helpful for, you know, supporting this cortisol awakening response, regulating energy and mood for the day ahead as well. So that's great, you know, for the mornings, these dark mornings. I also have one in my kitchen. So once I've got out of bed, I then make my way into the kitchen, and that's where I spend most of my time before I then go and shower and get ready for the day. So for the first 20 to 30 minutes of my day, I've got this 10,000 lux light. Obviously, you can move yours around or have a few in the house where needed, depending on what you're doing in the morning. So if you need one in the bathroom and you don't have a plug in there, maybe you can just stretch it in. So it's just, you know, the lamp is just sitting by the door. So this, getting that light, daylight, ideally natural daylight from outside, or the 10,000 lux from your light box into the eyes, that triggers the cortisol awakening response. Because in the last episode, I talked about this area of the brain known as the SCN. That SCN in the brain, it responds to darkness at night and light in the morning. And that is what sets that circadian rhythm up for you. So it's really important that we're getting this natural daylight or 10,000 lux in the eyes. You know, you're not staring right at the sun or staring right at the lamp, but you just want it, you know, you just want to be around it. Then cold water exposure also helps support the cortisol awakening response. So again, within the sort of 30 to 60 minutes of waking, it could be a cold shower. It could be that you splash your face with ice cold water. Some people leave a bowl of water in the fridge, and in the mornings they just kind of dunk their face in it or splash their face with it. That can be helpful. Natural daylight is the absolute, you know, gold standard for triggering that cortisol awakening response. Moving your body as well. So signaling to the body that it's time to wake up, signaling to the brain, we're awake now, we're alive, let's get cortisol going. So any kind of gentle movement, walking is great, obviously being outside, double whammy, yoga, qigong, a gentle jog, whatever feels good for you first thing in the morning. And then during the day, get outside again as much as you can. Around midday, you know, when the sun is highest in the sky, even in winter, through the clouds, we're still getting that, you know, our eyes are still, that SCN in the brain is still responding to natural daylight, even with cloud. We just need to be outside a bit longer. So get outside as much as you can, particularly over winter. This really will support your circadian rhythm and help you sleep better at night and have a real knock-on impact to energy, to mood, cycle health. So much more, even weight and immunity. Natural light is really what anchors your rhythm, and then darkness, dim lights and darkness at night. Those two things are so, so important. Other things that can help, like I said, about, you know, sort of limiting caffeine after, like, say, 11 a.m. ideally, not having anything after 11 a.m. And best in the morning with or after a protein-rich breakfast as opposed to before. And then eating your meals within a 12-hour window. So I've talked about this before, but ideally finishing dinner sort of 2 to 3 hours before bed, at least 2 hours before bed, because when we go to bed, we don't want the digestive system to be trying to work, because that's also going to be spiking cortisol. You know, this is not a time to be making sleep hormones when the digestive system has a lot of work to do. And at nighttime, just create that calm, sleep-ready environment as much as you can from early evening, you know, maybe from around 7 o'clock, dimming the lights everywhere. We've got really bright ceiling lighting in our kitchen, and so we don't use that during the evening while we're making dinner and clearing up and washing up. I've put some lamps in there, so they're just nice sort of dim lights, enough for us to really be able to see what we're doing comfortably, but just not the horrible sort of overhead really bright lighting. You can use things like salt lamps as well. I have a Himalayan salt lamp in the living room. It's just really lovely and cozy and just really helps to calm as well. And a couple of other lamps. So it's, you know, you've still got the lighting that you need, but it's not overhead really bright and spiking cortisol. It's still supportive of melatonin production. And of course, allow it to get darker and darker closer to bedtime. So if there's some lamps that you can, you know, turn off once you've finished in the kitchen, for example, and make the light in the, you know, where you are for the rest of the evening even dimmer, then that's great. And avoid blue light, like too much blue light exposure, particularly in the hour before you're going to bed. So if you go to bed at 10:30, then work backwards, you know, by 9:30, you really want to be coming off screens completely, avoiding your phone, putting it away until the next morning, you know, avoiding TV, any other screens, just really trying to have a screen-free hour before bed. And in that time, you could do some gentle yoga stretches, some restorative yoga, some yin yoga. Could even take a you know, I guess the more so in the summer months, take a nice little walk outside and then just come back and get yourself ready for bed. And ideally as well, if we use blue light blocking glasses for the time that we are using screens during the evening, so before that 1 hour of screen free time, the time that we are going to sit there watching TV or being on our phone, or maybe we need to do something on our laptop, using blue light blocking glasses can be really helpful for just decreasing how much of that blue light actually gets into the iris and to that SCN in the brain. And that will really help to, you know, prevent the spiking of cortisol when you're using those things. So really that's, you know, those are the sort of key things that we want to be doing. And I'd also say something else that's important and quite helpful is not to look at your phone in the morning before you've got that natural daylight or the 10,000 lux lamp exposure. So ideally delay when you grab your phone. I keep mine out of the room, so it's charging overnight in another room. I don't touch it. Usually I don't look at my phone after sort of 8 o'clock at night. I might quickly check the weather or something before I go to bed to see what it's going to be like in the morning. Otherwise, it's gone. I'm not looking at apps or, you know, engaging in anything. And then in the mornings, we just don't want to pick it up and look at it and start scrolling or using it really until we've had exposure to natural daylight or the 10,000 lux light, you know, for a good 5-10 minutes. So that's also going to be really helpful for your state of mind anyway. You know, I think if we start that, what we start the day with really does set the tone for the rest of the day. So if we start the day by grabbing our phone and scrolling through the news or, you know, Instagram feeds, and again, getting triggered by negativity, or we see some messages from colleagues or our manager about something we have to do today, and already we're just in that stress mode, you know, before the day's even started. So there's multiple reasons why we kind of want to delay when we look at our phone. Give yourself some space, give yourself that headspace in the morning to just be, to just think about, okay, how am I feeling? How's my day going to go? You know, think about some good things about your life, things that you're grateful for, do a little bit of reflection. Maybe you can journal, maybe you've got 2 to 3 minutes to write in your journal, maybe you haven't. Maybe you can just sit and breathe, do the 4-6 breathing for 2 minutes on the edge of your bed with your feet on the floor before you, you know, get up and start your day. Have a bit of exposure to natural light or the 10,000 lux light, and then pick up your phone when you need to. So I hope that's been helpful. I just really wanted to reiterate the importance of you know, these light and dark cues and how the circadian rhythm works, what the cortisol awakening response is and why that's so important. Obviously, I could go down rabbit holes with supplements that can be supportive. Really, I like to look at a person individually to sort of see what they might benefit from. But something that is going to be an overall benefit for most people is magnesium glycinate. If you don't already use it, taking 300 to 400 milligrams of magnesium glycinate, specifically that form, in the evenings, about an hour or half an hour before bed, can be really helpful for supporting a more restorative sleep. But of course, we want to be doing these other things that I've talked about today first and getting those habits, you know, really dialed in. And then something like magnesium glycinate can be even, you know, that sort of cherry on top. That's it for today. Any questions, anything you'd like to ask or put to me as a way of like an idea for future episodes, any particular questions that you've got for that you'd like me to address on future episodes, please do let me know. It really helps me. I am someone who responds to people's questions, to people's feedback, to what people want. I really find that so much more enjoyable when I'm putting together my plan for what I'm going to talk about week to week. So please do. It would be so helpful for me if you get in touch and let me know. You can email me, francesca@francescaliparotti.com. You'll also find that in the show notes. Or DM me on Instagram, which is perimenopausenutritionist_FL, I think. Yeah. All right. So thank you for listening and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.